morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with militaries and economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes may be opened, and you may change your mind towards many of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news, my mission today will be to help you understand what is occurring behind these headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage Yahweh on his terms by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with God's guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship. Our phone number, if you'd like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said on this program, is 877-376-45. We are told by the BBC that fighters from around the world have filtered into Syria. Now, the BBC has journalists who have college degrees. They know that there is a much more accurate term for those that have filtered into Syria. There's a pair of religious terms that are used ubiquitously, and 100% of these fighters would use these terms to describe themselves. It's a shame that they chose not to write the most descriptive terms. They could have written jihadists from around the world, mujahideen from around the world. They could have written Islamic jihadists or Muslim mujahideen. Any one of those would have been appropriate, but they simply chose fighters. I guess it gives this mythos that perhaps the opposition are freedom fighters. Anyway, it says they're from around the world. They have filtered into Syria to join a civil war that has split along sectarian lines. Has split. This sounds like this civil war began on something other than the sectarian lines. What's sectarian? You know, they're secular and they're sectarian. Secular means non-religious and sectarian means religious lines. So this journalist wants you to believe that this war at one time was fought perhaps on political grounds without either constituents on either side being different religious persuasions, and that now it has split because of the filtering in of foreign jihadists. The Syrians, oh no, they were just freedom fighters looking out for everyone's interests, fighting on behalf of the minorities, fighting for women, for apple pie, and for the Boy Scouts. It's a bunch of rubbish. This was a peaceful protest of Sunni Muslims protesting the dictatorial abuse that they were suffering under the Assad dictatorship, which is controlled and empowered now by Iran since the United States gave Iraq to Iran during our invasion. That's how it began. It was Sunnis protesting peacefully against Shia, Alawites in this case. So what happened? The Saudi Arabians, now threatened by the Iranians after the gift of Iraq to Iran by the United States, decided that this would be a good place for a proxy war. So did Qatar. The dictator, the emir over Qatar, has had a ball with his newfound wealth, buying American weapons and distributing them around the world to turn otherwise peaceful protests into civil wars. He did it in Libya. He's doing it in Gaza. He is now doing it in Syria. And so you have two Sunni Muslim dictators who are about the task of arming the Sunni protesters so that what was a peaceful protest is now a civil war. But this civil war began purely on sectarian grounds. It did not migrate to this position. Now, this article continues to read, increasingly pitting the ruling Alawite community against the majority Sunni Muslims. Now, Alawite is essentially a misnomer. The reality is that Sunni Islam represents somewhere between 80 and 90% of Muslims, and that Shia Islam represents between 10 and 20% of Islam, and that the Alawites are simply a part of Shia Islam, the minority. There's only two countries that I'm aware of where Shia Islam is dominant, Iran and Iraq. Outside of those countries, it is principally Sunni Islam. Now, so that you have a little feel for how Islam breaks down and have an appreciation for Shia Islam, which is the driving force behind Assad, it is also the controlling force now of both Iran and Iraq. The largest branch of Shia is called the Twelver. Imami Islam would be its native title, but it means Twelver. Adherents of the Twelver are commonly referred to as, guess what, Twelvers, which is derived from their belief in 12 divinely ordained leaders known as the 12 Imams, and the belief that the Mahdi will be none other than the returned 12th Imam that disappeared and is believed by the Twelvers, by Shia Muslims, to be in occultation. No, I didn't make that up. They call it occultation. Approximately 85% of the Shia are Twelvers, and the term Shia Muslim is commonly used in English, and it, when it is used, it depicts the Twelvers. Now, the occultation, should you be curious, in Shia Islam refers to a belief that the messianic figure, or Mahdi, who in Shia is thought to be an infallible male descendant of the founder of Islam, Muhammad, by the way, that's impossible, was born but disappeared and will one day return and fill the world with justice. Some Shias, such as the Zaidi and Zizari Islamia, do not believe in the idea of the occultation. The groups do believe it. It differs relative to succession, however. And there are definite descriptions of what occultation means. But the hidden imam is considered to be the imam of the time, to hold authority over the community and to guide and protect individuals in the Shia community. This is from Wikipedia. The fact of the matter is the 12th imam, the Mahdi, is what the Ahmadinejad is announcing. He is the in Christian parlance, the John the Baptist for the Mahdi, the Islamic Messiah. He will be a warlord, and he will unify, he is predicted to unify the Islamic nations so that they can more successfully wage war against non-Muslims. His first target will be Israel. This reality, this prediction is actually not found in the Quran or Hadith, so it cannot be attributed to Muhammad. It is somewhat accurate, although it is borrowed from Yah's scriptural testimony and then twisted. God does speak of Gog, leader of the Magog Federation, which is a league of all Islamic nations in the last days, which unite for the express purpose of waging war against Israel first and then against the world. And so the Mahdi is Gog. He will lose. The Jafari, which is another of of name for these community derive their Sharia, which is the religious law of Muslims, from the Quran and Sunnah. Now, it's always stated that Sharia is derived from the Quran and the Sunnah, but that there really is nothing to base law upon in the Quran. If you were to break down the laws that are derived from the Quran versus the Sunnah, you would find that it's about 95-5, some maybe less generous might say 99-1, with the Sunnah being the primary source of law. Now, what is Sunnah? That is the basis, that is the words and deeds of Muhammad, the traditions of Muhammad, the teachings and an example of Muhammad would be Sunnah. The source of Sunnah is exclusively Hadith, and we have talked extensively about Hadith throughout this program. So the difference between Sunnah and Shia Sharia, so Sunni and Shia Sharia, results from a Shia belief that Muhammad assigned Ali to be the first ruler and leader after him, the Khalifa. Moreover, according to Shia, an imam or caliph cannot be democratically elected and has to be nominated by Allah. Sunnis believe that their caliphs were popular and had a greater claim because of their popularity, and that is how they became caliphs. So the reality here is that that Shia is Islam is based entirely on this notion that Muhammad's grandson Ali, his lone living descendant, should have been the leader following Muhammad's death. But the Sunni Muslims, with this group that became known as the Sunni Muslims, that which were the business merchants in Mecca that had initially funded Muhammad and then conquered by him, said, no, I think we ought to, because we have more influence than anyone else. And so they fought a battle to determine God's will in this case. And God must have favored the Meccans because they killed Ali. And so Shia Islam is based upon grieving for that which could have been, but has long been lost. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta. You can join this conversation by calling 1-877-377-3745. The reason we're talking about this is that since you don't hear it in the news, it's important to have an understanding of who the forces are at play in Islam. Now, God gave us a very succinct explanation of what these fellows would be like. Speaking of Ishmael's descendants and Muhammad, and Allah claimed that Ishmael is the forefather of Islam. Speaking of his descendants, Yahweh said in his Torah that they will be wild asses of men. Their hands will be raised against their brothers. Their brothers' hands will be raised against them, and they will live in hostility with the whole world. That's a very succinct prediction. It says that they will act in an uncivilized manner. I mean, asses. You know, there's a lot of insight you can get just on the type of animal. Stubborn, obstinate, bad attitude. If you were to try to interact with a wild ass, you're going to get kicked, you're going to get bitten, going to get spit upon. You know, this is not a charming individual. And then to say that, you know, there's a lot of people who have lived in hostility with the world. I mean, you look at the warrior kingdoms, Sparta, for example. I mean, they were hostile to everybody. So a lot of people that have been, the great conquerors were were at peace with themselves, but, Genghis Khan, Kublai Khan, following him. Peace with themselves, but at war with everyone else. This was a very unique prophecy, and it said that Muslims would be at war, would live at war with the whole world. You know, the Pledge of Aqaba, where Muhammad got the first Muslims to say that they would wage war against all mankind on behalf of Muhammad and Allah. But you don't typically have great warrior kingdoms at war with one another. It's civil war. This civil war in Syria is a microcosm of the hostility that has existed for centuries between Muslims. You know, I've been, and I don't know why I do this, and I'm going to have to stop, but I have a lot of just idiots that write me at Prophet of Doom, and you just can't reason with an idiot. And most of the idiots present themselves as either scholars or as academicians or, you know, something. I mean, they just have this grandiose view of themselves, and they hate Jews, and they hate Christianity. They accuse me of being a Jewish Christian, typically, at Prophet of Doom, and then they go on to rant about how Christians and Jews mistreat Muslims. And when you point out the fact to them that 99% of today's terrorist acts are perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims, and that Muslims kill 100 Muslims for every Muslim that is killed by a non-Muslim, they don't even know how to respond. But that's the truth. Muslims kill more Muslims than they do anyone else, and that is exactly what is happening in Syria. It's what has happened over the centuries. It is a precise fulfillment of a very unique prophecy. In fact, I think you would have a very difficult time finding any group of people that have acted so precisely in harmony with this prediction. The unique thing about the Shias, by the way, is that the only thing that differentiates them from Sunni Muslims is who's empowered to be in control. You know, who's going to be the caliph? That's it. That's the only place of differentiation between them. Exactly the same Quran, exactly the same Hadith, and so it's just who's in power. And so the having recognized that the only racial heir, if you will, direct descendant, was murdered by fellow Muslims, mind you, the Shia have decided that there are imams who are infallible, and that those imams have been chosen by Allah to rule in the stead of Ali. So that is their belief. And when you put yourself in a position where you begin to think that individuals are infallible and inspired by God, well, you get into the mess that Roman Catholics are in, where you stop thinking and you start just reacting to foolishness. At that point, you become prey. You're nothing but a victim. And such is the nature of Shia Islam. When we return to Shattering Myths after this break, we will continue with the article on what is taking place in Syria, because it tells us so much about our future and our world as it exists today. Shattering Myths. We are now that we have an understanding of the minute differences between Shia and Sunnis. Now, with these minute differences, you wouldn't think that over an unanswerable issue, an issue that has absolutely no legitimate play in today's world, that they would be at each other's throats, slicing them, because of course there is no caliphate. There's no unified Islamic leader, no Pope of Islam, if you will. And second, the Shias can't even provide a candidate because their line has long since dried up. So all this really is a matter of religious indoctrination, religious-based rage, religious-based hatred, religious ignorance. This is religion doing the things that religion does, except Islam is just the world's best religion when it comes to inciting hatred, rage, and violence. So, here's the continuation of the article. The deepened sectarian divisions in Syria may diminish prospects for any post-conflict reconciliation if President Bashar Assad is toppled. Can you imagine writing this? Can you imagine just being so stupid that you'd write this? That the sectarian divisions may diminish prospects for post-conflict reconciliation. How could you be that idiotic? How could you say, all right, you got a religious war, which means people aren't thinking, they're just responding to the dictates of their imams, and they're going at each other with all the weapons that they can muster. And they're killing one another like savages, killing women and children indiscriminately. And on one side, you've got all Sunni Muslims, jihadists. On the other side, you've got the government, which is backed by Iran, of Syria. Now, backing the government but not fighting are the Christians, which recognize that they need to side with Assad, because if Assad loses, they're dead. They're not going to form a coalition with the Sunnis, because the Sunnis will kill them. And you have the Shiites, which know that the last time that Sunnis ruled over them in the neighboring country, it was Iraq, and they were treated like stooges, like second-class citizens, like as if they were non-Muslims. And so they have a perfect example of what happens, the Shia do, when Sunnis rule. And so there is a 0% chance that you're going to have reconciliation amongst the groups. This article then continues, and the influx of foreign fighters raises the risk of the war spilling into neighboring countries riven by the same sectarian fault lines that cut through Syria. Oh, come on. It's one of the great frustrations is the inability of journalists to actually do journalism, to check the facts, and then based upon the facts to present reasonable conclusions, insights which might help people. There really aren't similar fault lines. In fact, it is extraordinarily rare that you would find such fault lines as are being exploited in the proxy war that is existing in Syria. Now, what's interesting here, though, of course, is this influx of foreign fighters, and we'll return to that in a moment. But here are the realities. The Shia are a meaningful minority. So, in Syria, the Shia are a minority, but a significant minority. So, Shia are a meaningful minority in Syria, in Lebanon, and Iraq. Those are the only three countries. They are a decided, and by the way, the outcome in terms of who's in control has already been determined in Lebanon and Iraq. In Lebanon, Hezbollah prevailed on behalf of Shia Islam. In Iraq, the United States prevailed on behalf of Shia Islam. And so Syria is the only country where this proxy war can be fought. There is no chance that it spills out as this kind of a proxy war. Now, you could have outright war between Iran and Saudi Arabia, but that's not the same sectarian fault lines that other countries are riven with. It's country to country, not internal country. They are a decided minority. These are Shia. Shia are a decided minority, a very tiny minority, in Afghanistan, in Saudi Arabia, in Yemen, and in the Emirates. They don't have enough population to be an effective opposition. And while Shias are irrelevant in Turkey, that nation has a meaningful population of Alevi. Alevis represent about 20% of the Turkish population. They live mostly among the Kurds, who are, by the Kurds themselves, or by the way, they're 80% Sunni and about 20% Alevi. There are Kurd is a racial division and not a sectarian division. There are two countries where Shia are a decided majority, which are, of course, Iran and Iraq. Now, Alevi, if you're curious, is a blend of pagan Mongolian traditions, Shia and Sufi Islam. Sufi Islam is spiritual Islam. It's less than 1% of Muslims. And it has some elements of Zoroastrianism and the Eastern Orthodox Christianity all blended together with some Gnosticism. So, as it relates to the idea that this war is going to spill out to neighboring countries which are riven by the same sectarian fault lines, that is impossible. It can spill out. This is what we're looking at as a precursor of World War III. It's a very important battle because you've got the United States and Europe on aiding the Mujahideen, the jihadists, and you've got China and Russia aiding the Shias and the Assad government on behalf of Iran. And you have Iran and Saudi Arabia in opposition to one another. And so this is a major conflict that has foreboding, will have a foreboding impact on the world over the next 10 to 15 years. But it cannot, as this article say, spill out on into countries that are similarly divided. Now, what was interesting here is that the fighters we are learning in Syria are being imported. Same thing happened in Afghanistan when the Great Jihad was being fought on behalf of the United States through Pakistan using the Taliban and Al-Qaeda to oppose the Soviet-backed government, what was called the Great Jihad. The majority of the fighters were not Afghanis. They were imported Muslims who wanted to fight jihad because jihad is the highest calling in Islam. It's the only guaranteed way to enter Allah's brothel and have the multiple virgins. And so that was the nature of that battle. In Iraq, a huge percentage of those that the American forces fought in its invasion of Iraq were imported fighters. The same thing now is true in Syria, that a very substantial number of the jihadists are just imported fundamentalist Muslims who like to wage jihad because it is the highest calling in Islam. So, reading on, the article says, as battles between, and this is a quote, as battles between government forces and anti-government armed groups approach the end of their second year, the conflict has become overtly sectarian in nature, end quote, has become. The investigations led by Brazilian expert Paulo Pinheiro said in an updated report. I mean, come on. Has become. It has always been this way. It's not has become. It just is. As a result, they said, more civilians are seeking to arm themselves in the conflict, which began 21 months ago with street demonstrations demanding democratic reform and evolved into an armed insurgency bent on toppling Assad. There are two reasons that it became armed. And I'm going to go back over this again because it's essential to understand how we got into this mess. Because if you don't understand how you get into messes, you'll continue to get into them. This was a combination of primarily the United States invading Iraq and giving Iraq to Iran. When the United States invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran, it destabilized the Islamic Middle East. It made Iran vastly more empowered because it removed their only enemy and gave them a country that had formerly been their enemy, which means they were now the primary influence in Syria and then in Lebanon and now in Gaza. And so the Sauds, who are Sunni Muslims, had to respond, felt a need to respond to that. And so they have been using Syria as a proxy war. Moreover, in Qatar, the United States has been using Qatar to supply weapons to Mujahideen, as we did in Libya, very weapons that were turned on us and killed our ambassador, and also now in Syria. But even more condemning, the United States provided weapons to Sunni Muslims in Iraq. It was called the Awakening Program. It was part of our surge. And by arming the Sunni Muslims in Iraq, what we told them is that this will be your defense against the Shia Mahdi Mujahideen, the army of the Mahdi that was the private militia of the second most important Shia religious figure in Iraq. Well, it's those fighters and those guns that are being turned on Assad. You see, in Iraq, before the U.S. invasion, a minority of Sunnis controlled the country, which was majority Shia. And so now in Syria, the guns of the Sunnis, who lost because of the United States invasion, are being deployed against the minority Shias in Syria so that they have a place to live without being oppressed by the religious majority. So we contributed. We made this mess. And now we're trying to clean it up, and there is no way to clean it up. You can't turn back the tide of this. As a matter of fact, the United States at this point is engaged in recognizing the very Mujahideen who have become so murderous, and we're about the business of supplying them with weapons. So what we have found there, the article says, is that in the last few months that the minorities have tried to stay away from the conflict and have begun to arm themselves to protect themselves. Well, we're going to examine why, again, the minorities, the ethnic and religious minority groups, have aligned themselves with Assad and yet have not engaged in the battle. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. I've been spending the commercial breaks reading up on the Philistines. Find it fascinating. Just as there are so many myths circulating regarding what's happening in Syria. In fact, almost everything that we hear and read in the newspaper in Syria is false, which is why we're dissecting this particular article. It's the same kind of myth that circulate this mythos that there was such a thing as a Palestinian people, or that there is a Palestinian people and that there is a country named Palestine. It is absolutely based upon marketing myth that was primarily derived in the last 50 years or so. And so we will devote a future program to that myth. Fascinating study. When you peel back behind the scenes of that which is assumed to be true, that which is promoted as universal truth in our world, like this notion of a Palestinian people and a Palestinian state, or the myth of freedom fighters seeking democracy in Syria as a derivative of the Arab Spring, which was peaceful protests to depose dictators. When you slice behind the headlines and come to understand what's actually happening, who's benefiting, who are the forces that are at play here, and what's the consequence for our future, you find that the vast majority of what you read and what you hear is untrue. And then you have to question, well, why would your government, why would your media, why would politicians lie? Why would they all tell the same untrue story? Why would Americans engage in Syria after having engaged in Libya and it turning out to be such a mess? Why would they support a revolution in Egypt after seeing what happened in Tunisia and in Libya? Why do that? And, well, you'll find the answers when you understand who the forces are that are acting on the world stage. Well, this article continues to read that the minority groups, which would be primarily Christians and Shia Muslims, have not joined in the fight. They are allowing Assad to fight on their behalf, which, interesting, is the largest armed group in Syria, apart from the now the Mujahideen that are fighting the government and the government forces themselves, is Hezbollah. Hezbollah is headquartered in Syria, in Damascus. Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, lives in and rules Hezbollah from Damascus, and yet they have not engaged. And so you have to wonder, what in the world is going on here? Well, there's a reason that, the coalition of Sunnis has not recruited successfully Christians. It's because the Christians are siding with Assad. They exist with Assad. They die with the Mujahideen that the United States is now arming and supporting. And Hezbollah doesn't want to waste its bullets killing Muslims. If it kills Muslims, if Hezbollah, which is Shia Islam, kills Sunni Muslims, then it will make Hezbollah less popular in places like Gaza. It will diminish Iran's influence in the Islamic world. But if they continue to use their weapons to attack Israel, it makes them more popular. And so that's what's going on. But if it appears that Assad's going to fall, Hezbollah will engage. And this civil war will become far more ruthless and devastating. This article continues. It was written by the BBC. Most of the foreign fighters slipping into Syria are there to join rebel groups or to fight independently alongside of them. These are Sunnis, the article reads, from other countries in the Middle East and Northern Africa. The UN investigations and investigators have found. And they have now reported their findings to the journalistic community. The UN is saying the fighters who are wielding this war against Assad come from all over Europe and America, and especially the neighboring countries. Yes, they come primarily from Iraq. And the guns they are wielding were supplied by America during the awakening councils. You don't make peace by arming people. There's always a consequence. Would love to continue this article, and we will do so when time permits tomorrow. But when we return to Shattering Myths after the break, we're going to return to the only ray of hope in our world, to Yahweh and His testimony.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that...